Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith, alongside my very good friend, Shane Stetsny, and we're going to talk a little bit about what went on at Antigo and lead us into Crandon.
Yeah, you know, looking back at Antigo, you and I talked probably more than we needed to about the schedule change, and we talked about it with Michael Meister. I talked about it with Cross Kirchmeyer, what we thought that the pro schedule change at Antigo for rounds 3 and 4 would do, what kind of curveball it would be for the drivers. And honestly, I don't think it was that big of a difference. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Shane. I mean, I don't think it really played a big difference. I mean, granted, later in the day on Sunday, people, racers, fans are going to head out when they want to head out. They all have a 9-to-5, 90% of them in the sportsmen. So at the same time, you know, I really didn't tell if it worked or didn't work. I mean, but in a different way, I believe that we had to try different things. So it's only going in the right direction.
I will say I could get used to Pro 2 as the opening race for right. the pros. And I, you know, those drivers, yeah, they had a better track. It was dry as all heck in round 3, and there was nothing we could do about that. They had been watering the track all day. They did a better job of it on Sunday. And, you know, Pro 2 had a really nice track for their round 4 race. I think my other big takeaway is, like, Pro Spec as the finale race. I could get behind that every round the rest of this year, I think.
Yeah, you got to keep an exciting class at the end of the day, no matter what. And I mean, granted, it was Pro 4 in the past for a long, long time, but Pro Spec, 14-plus trucks in the class. We're going to see probably over 16 at Crandon. I mean, that puts on one hell of a show, and we've seen it right in front of us all weekend long. If we put that class at the end of the day, I believe nobody's going to want to go home early.
Right. Let's talk about especially round 3, Saturday night. They were the, like I said, the closer. It felt like a pro light race from a couple of years ago. There was all kinds of contact, not just among the leaders, but kind of throughout. At one point, the whole field was kind of topsy-turvy with a bunch of new guys and unproven guys running up in the top spots, and the, you know, the usual suspects, the fast kids and the fast old guys stuck in traffic. A whole bunch of lead changes. At different points, Chris Vanden Elsen led and then had an electrical issue that ended up with him upside down. And Visser was out front for a little bit, and then he tangled and kind of was the recipient of some contact from Wyatt Miller. Miller led for a little bit, and then he didn't lead, and ultimately Miller came back and won the race. It was just a wild one, and that's kind of what Pro Spec has been now since, you know, the start of last year, really.
Oh, yeah, and I think it's only going to get bigger and better as the year goes on. I mean, granted, you said it, it looks like an old-school pro light race. They were shearing off bedsides, body panels. No matter what it took, they were going to do to get to the checkered flag, and we have a lot of great talent in that class, so I just look for bigger and better things from now on because of the driving ability and the truck count. I think even 7th through 10th was having a great battle.
Do you think there's anything there with the fact that we had more contact between Wyatt Miller and Nick Visser during that race? I mean, you and I stopped by Nick's pit after the race, and they weren't thrilled about it. I don't know that it mattered who the contact was from. I think, you know, Nick kind of got beat around that race, frankly. Do you think that, I don't want to say that the situation from last year is ongoing, but it seems like those two tend to find each other on the racetrack.
Yeah, and you know, it was kind of hit and miss for me. I was like, oh boy, let's see what goes on and watch as it expands out throughout the race. And then, like you said, we went and talked to Nick, and they weren't too fond. And I mean, things are going to happen like that, right? You got to put the truck where it needs to be, and sometimes you put it where you don't want it to be, and they've been letting a lot of things go. So I don't know if you just keep continuing racing like that and it'll pan out for itself, but not everybody's going to be happy, Shane. We both know this. You're not going to make everyone happy. One person has to be on the losing end and one has to be on the winning end. And sometimes the winner isn't right and the loser isn't right. But I just think that we got to just let them duke it out. As long as you're not taking each other out and intentionally doing it, and if it's a rubbing racing incident, I think we could let it go. But I could feel Nick Visser, how he felt, but as well as Wyatt Miller, he's trying to do what he can as well. And Nick, there's some times where he does what Wyatt did. So where do we start?
Yeah, and you kind of touched on a bigger point. Champ Race Control has typically kind of tried to let drivers sort things out amongst themselves. They try not to intervene, I guess.
Right.
And that's kind of taking a page from motocross in a way, right? Or a rider runs you a little bit dirty in this corner and then you just give it back and then you're supposed to just be done with it. And I think our drivers in Champ Off-Road have the ability to do that too. It's just the stakes seem a little bit higher when you're in a $200,000 race truck.
Oh, yeah. And you could look at what day it is. And if it's early morning Saturday and you're racing, you know, you got to race the next day. It's like, how many more times can you allow yourself to put yourself in that position? So
right.
It is what it is. I mean, you got to go out, race as hard as you can, and accidents are going to happen. But sometimes maybe Champ and us have to step in a little bit, not us being you and I, but
I don't want to get involved. Come on.
That. No, no, absolutely not.
Don't put us in that.
I would not do that to us, Shay. We have enough stress up in the booth. But at the same time, I think we let them pan it out. And if it gets really dirty, then we can step in. But like you said, Supercross, Motocross, I mean, you watch Hayden Deegan. He'll put it wherever he needs to do to win the race. If he's got a jab step the guy going in the corner, well, you shouldn't have left the door open. So, I mean, it's a hit and miss. But I think we got to keep it clean to a point. But, hey, you know, I understand they're expensive trucks, but sometimes you have to move the person out of the way to get there. And like I said, nobody's always going to be happy in any given time.
It kind of has an old school feel to it in a way too, to let the drivers kind of settle it themselves. There's a name that comes to mind. Kurt LeDuc was notorious for being super aggressive, being willing to race physically to the point where drivers knew when you're trying to pass Kurt or trying to defend a position from Kurt LeDuc, you had to race a little bit differently than if it was somebody else in the class, right? And again, it's fine as long as the drivers can have some kind of, you know, handshake agreement, I guess, that it doesn't go too far, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny you bring up Kurt because we know how he muscled his way through all the time. But hey, that's the driver he was. He built his trucks big and bad and tough enough to go to war, right? They have to be light enough to race, but like, he was tough enough to take on the challenge. And, you know, that's what he was known for. He was a fast, badass racer. But at the end of the day, right, you didn't want to mess with him. How many people in the past said, hey, I don't want to go by Kurt, especially when Kyle and Todd were out there. It was like Dale Earnhardt Sr. when Junior was out there. You're going to protect your kids to a point, but we watched it so many times. And I believe to hold your own is one thing, but to finish up front and to win races, you can't be caught beating the crap out of everybody, right?
Right.
You got to have your truck finish at the end of the day, too.
And to put a bow on that as it relates to Wyatt Miller and Nick Visser, you know, you go to the next day, round four, and Visser defended his home turf, took the win, and Miller ended up having a mechanical issue and was out of that one early. So the universe, I guess, finds a way to balance itself.
That it does.
Well, some of the other action more on the negative side that we saw at Antigo was Marsha Jones, Sportsman Side-by-Side, rolled over in round three. We found out Saturday night that she had broken her neck. Everything was kind of tense for you know, those of us who are friends of Marsha's, and found out good news. We already knew by Sunday before racing was done that she was on the way home, expected to make essentially a full recovery, even though it was really dicey. She had to have emergency surgery on Saturday night. But I did message her son, Cody Jones, and he said, yeah, she's doing great. She's going to be at Crandon hanging out. So that is really good news about Marsha.
Yeah, that's scary, boy. You never want to see anyone get hurt, anybody in our divisions as well. And it just sucks when that stuff happens, but I'm glad she's making recovery, and what she went through, our prayers and thoughts are all with her and her family. And man, that's scary stuff.
Yeah. It'll be good to see her at the racetrack again. Even just, you know, it'll be 3 weeks when Crandon rolls around since she got hurt. So that's pretty incredible to be in that good of shape. And I think it's a good testament to how seriously we take safety too. I was thinking about this earlier today. It's really been, I think, like over 10 years since we've had an injury that like really affected someone's quality of life. It's been a long time, which, you know, I guess that's a credit to the drivers too, that they're taking that safety seriously.
Oh yeah. It's really huge for our whole sport. And that's why we always push safety as much as we do. And some people try to get away with it, just doing stuff that shouldn't be done in the safety positions that they're in. And that's why we wear our Hans device, our helmets, our neck restraints, arm restraints, everything that we need to, because we want to see them live another day. And that goes huge for our sport to see somebody actually get back to the racetrack after 3 weeks of being in the worst shape of their life.
Right. And I'm excited to see her. I will go on the record again as saying that she did beat me Labor Day weekend. I got beat by a grandma. She made a big point of it that weekend to rub that in my face a little bit. So glad to hear you're doing well, Marcia, sincerely. Some of the other big stories from Antigo, what a bounce back for Michael Meister. We had him on the podcast after Wheatland when basically everything that could have gone wrong for him did. He didn't finish either of those two races in the opening rounds. And then he showed up to Antigo and reminded everybody that he is, in fact, Michael Meister and swept the weekend. Clawed his way back to fourth in the points. He's behind Billy Booth, Cole Bernlohr, and Tony Kiepers. But what a weekend for Michael Meister, right?
Yeah, talk about a bounce back. That was unbelievable. I mean, we knew he could do it, but just to get off of those DNFs and look forward. I mean, he had a lot of confidence when we talked to him on the podcast, and I knew he would be one to reckon with. But to sweep the weekend coming back and getting those wins under his belt, he's going to be a scary customer the rest of the year.
Oh, and, you know, look where we're going next, too. Crandon, the guy is how many World Cup wins at Crandon in Pro Buggy. He's as fast as anybody at the Big House.
Yeah, and this division's very talented. Obviously, anybody can win at any given time, but it seems like when Meister gets on a streak and he gets in the zone, it's hard to tame him. And I believe when he gets to Crandon, it's going to be hard to keep up to him, but it's going to be a battle to the end. But he's going in the right direction, and I'm sure if we talk to him right now, he's grinning ear to ear to be fourth in the points after two DNFs to start the year.
And I mentioned Billy Booth being the points leader after four rounds. And again, I do know that it's early in the season to be talking about championship stuff, but I'm the one that's always keeping an eye on it. We've talked a lot about Billy Booth the last couple of years coming up just short, and it's been just issues with consistency. And so far this year, he has a win, 2 second place finishes, and a third place finish. So it seems so far like he's found that consistency.
Oh, yeah. And that's what he wants at the end of the day, right? I mean, you said it great. Like, it's early in the season, but when you can be consistent and be in that top five, and especially when it's this talented, to be in the top three is huge. If you can keep doing that throughout the season, that points championship will come to you. And Billy's been off that pedestal just by inches, it seemed like, in very few points, a couple different years. But now I feel he's focused, right? Him and his father know what they need to do, and he's fast each and every time in that 51 Mud Muncher ride. And it seems like we talk about him more and more as the season goes on because it's that consistency.
Another headline for me coming out of Antigo in rounds 3 and 4 was that we had a few first-time winners. The first one we'll talk about, not a first-time winner in Champ Off Road, but Colin Truitt finally got his first win in pro side-by-side on Sunday in round 4. That was a really wild race. But it seems like Truitt has been just snake bitten, like he somehow walked under a ladder every time he's about to go get into his turbo car. Finally, he breaks through for the win. That's got to be huge for him, right? We've known that he could win in pro stock. He swept Antigo just last year in pro stock. But to finally break through, and we've, like we've said, pro side by side, top to bottom, is all fast. Even the slow guys are fast. Add Colin Truitt to the list of guys that have proven they can win.
Oh, yeah, and the motion that he had on the podium and after getting out of the car and standing up on it, it was cool to see, right? We want to see new faces, new talent coming to the sport, but he's been around, right? And now he's in pro side-by-side, getting that win under his belt. I feel we're going to see Truitt really get some more wins here shortly, and it's all because of the effort and the time and putting yourself in that position to get the win.
Two other guys taking their first wins on the pro level, period. The 2 days of Pro Light. How many years has it been now, Brent? I think almost 4 years, pretty much since Michael Funk got into Pro Light. It felt like he was close. Like he showed speed right away coming out of Mod Cart. And every weekend you and I would have the conversation, you know, Friday night before racing started, like, man, is this it for Funk? Is he going to finally win? He finally did. And Joey Machosik beat him to it because Joey won in round 3 and then Michael Funk won in round 4. But what a moment for both of those two. And you could tell they were both two different sets of emotions, but super emotional to finally break through and get their first wins in Pro Light.
Oh, yeah. And that's what's so cool to see. I've I love it for Michalsik, love it for Funk. I mean, granted, it took Funk a little bit more time, but to get that win under his belt, he's been fast. He's talked about making mistakes that cost him races and top threes, but he feels that he's right there now, and I see that he's right there, and he's quick. He's going to be there right up until the end, but Michalsik to get a W here early in this season, going to that LS package, really favored him in a great way, and the kid can drive, right? Both Funk and him know how to get the job done now, so it's going to make the Pro Light class that much more interesting, because granted, we only have 5-6 trucks, but they're talented drivers.
This is kind of a silly question, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Which one of those wins do you think meant more to the driver, given what they've overcome? I mean, Funk last year totaled the truck he was racing at ERX with that huge rollover. You talked about the hardship Joey had this year losing a motor down in Wheatland. Do you feel like one win meant more to the driver than the other did?
Well, that's a tough question, right? I mean, as Joey, being friends with Joey for a long time, I mean, granted, we know how much that meant. But then you look deep back last year, what Funk went through after ERX, getting another truck, putting it together, and then coming out this season and being very quick. I mean, granted, it's hard to lean towards one another, but it seems like Funk really got that monkey off his back and felt what it is to win now. I mean, to be in the pro class and win is huge. Granted, it is for Michalsik himself, but Michalsik's been running how many different years in super stock truck and winning championships, winning races. Granted, Funk knows how to win in other classes too, but to get to their level and to get each a win, hey, I'll level it off for both of them. It had to mean so much, but for Funk, I got to lean towards him because, you know, what he went through and destroyed to come back and bounce back, and his family and what they've done behind the scenes. I mean, kudos to both of them, but I got to give it to Funk.
On that note, I was thinking about this as well today. So who do you think is next to be a driver to get their first pro win? A couple names I thought of were Nathan Wolf, who's been really strong in pro side-by-side, started the year with 3 second-place finishes, was leading in round 4 in that crazy race that Colin Truitt won, and then had a mechanical issue late while leading and ended up parked next to the track. Tony Keepers already has a couple second-place finishes this year. I already singled him out as a guy who I thought would be really competitive in pro buggy this year. Maybe Jake Kosmecki, who's just fresh off a second-place finish in round 4 in pro stock. Any of those names stand out as maybe next in line to get their first pro win in Champ Off-Road?
Man, Jake Kosmecki's really impressed me the past couple seasons and just keeping at it, right? I mean, he's always pitting by the greaves and getting info back and forth, but him and his father are always working on those cars and making them the best they can. And to finish second in round 4, I think it's just right around the corner for him to get that top spot. He's putting himself in great positions to be there, and he's definitely driving the wheels off it. So I'd have to lean towards Jake Kosmecki going to get the win next in the pro.
I'm curious if you agree with this, but what strikes me about Jake is that it seems like when the race unravels around him, it like doesn't ever seem to affect him. Like the more chaotic the race is outside of him, the better he seems to do. Do you get that same sense?
Oh, yeah, he picks up what everyone else drops, right? He's always there to pick up a mistake if somebody does, and he capitalizes on it. But I feel he's fast with himself and the car now where, yeah, he lets it come to him throughout the race, and look at what it did. So, I mean, yeah, granted, he's aggressive, but like I say it again, he's putting himself at the right place at the right time, and to be there is huge. But, yeah, he seems like he doesn't get into those big wrecks and the spin-outs because he's methodical about his driving. So we got to keep our eyes on Jake.
For the record, it's really hard for me to pick between the other two guys that I mentioned, Nathan Wolf and Tony Keepers. Like I said, Wolf was so close, and it felt like a big breakthrough for him to finally lead. And, you know, Jeb Boodle had some issues earlier in the race, and Boodle had been the only driver standing in his way this season. Heartbreaking for him to fall just short, but man, just knowing that we're coming to Crandon, where Tony Keepers has already done well. He's already been a winner in the other two buggy classes, including a world championship in light buggy a few years back. Maybe Tony Keepers is the guy to break through and get that first pro win here in just a few days.
Oh, yeah. I love that thought, dude. Tony Keepers has been around a long, long time, and it's great to see the passion, the heart and soul, and what he's done for other racers, too, as well, to keep them racing. So we'll have to keep an eye on Tony, and I believe his win's right around the corner.
Well, looking at the sportsman side of things, just unpacking a few things that unfolded at Antigo. Super Stock Truck is awesome all the time, every time. But round four was quite a wild race. I got to watch it from track level while Nolan filled in for me and gave me a breather. And what a dramatic race. I mean, first of all, I've been impressed both at Wheatland and at Antigo by Malachi Yackel, who's been really fast in his rookie year in Super Stock Truck. Led a bunch of those laps, and then, you know, inevitably, as we see so often, especially on the tighter tracks, Belanger bubbles his way up to the front. And then there was, from my vantage point, standing on the track, I saw Belanger leading, and then I heard a big cheer from the crowd, and I looked, and I said, who's cheering? And I'm like, hey, that's all Braden's family. What's going on? And I turned around, all of a sudden, Belanger's in the hot pit, and Braden Beauchamp takes the lead and takes the win. What was it like up in the booth for that one, and how do you make sense of that race?
It was crazy, right? We were getting word by the officials saying that Belanger might be getting the black flag, and I kept on looking at Nolan like, okay, for what? Like, what went on? So we just kept on calling the race, and then when the white flag came out and Belanger went in, we're like, no crap, like, there's no way. Like, they waited the last minute of the race to black flag him, but hey, it was the luck of the draw for Braden, and he got that spot. And after having gremlins in Missouri, he came back and got a W the first weekend back again. So he's going in the right direction. And you never know with Belanger as well, right? He'll bounce back. It's just wrong place at the right time.
Well, another guy who's been making his voice heard on top of the podium all four rounds so far, Evan Hockers. I think we kind of agreed that before the season started that we'd probably be at this point of the season or, you know, at Crandon before we saw a repeat winner in Light Buggy. Our bad. We were badly mistaken on that one. Like I said, Hockers is 4-for-4. The question on my mind now is who can stop that win streak?
Man, I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, he is just really in the right direction in his race career right now. He's so fast. That new car is wicked quick. And it just seems like in just a couple minutes of the race, he's working his way up into the top 3-4. And what he did at Antigo was just unreal, you know, to win two more in a row after Wheatland. Like you said, you would have never thunk at the end of the day with all that talent in that class. But I think he's going to be on a little bit of a winning streak if somebody doesn't take him.
It's been a little scary, too, for the rest of the guys in that class because a couple of those races weren't all that close.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there weren't even anyone in his gun sights at all to even try to catch up to him. So, I mean, you better go back home and do your homework. I guarantee after Antigo, all those 1,600 Light Buggy drivers are going back and like, what the hell is Hockers doing?
Do you have a prediction for who's going to break the win streak?
Oh, man, I don't know.
I mean, I honestly thought by now that, you know, Shillman would have a win. Jake Dischler, the speed he showed last year, I thought maybe by now he'd have a win.
Yeah, and even Aiden Wanasega, right? I mean, he's been right there, running fast, quick in qualifying, or in practice going into the weekend. So if he can get rid of some of the mistakes and the gremlins he's been having, I think he's one to watch for to knock off Hockers. But right now, you better take anything you can and learn, because wherever Hockers is going, I definitely would try to lasso him.
Maybe it'll be old man Stingle going back to Crandon and putting out a vintage run.
Hey, it could happen for sure. And, you know, he knows that track better than anyone. But Evan Hockers, he's such a calm, cool, collect driver. And it's even fun to talk to him once in a while, right? He's not very energetic. He enjoys being there, but he's just focused. Laid back. Yeah, he's really focused.
Those are the dudes that are scary on the racetrack, though, because some of the best drivers I've ever known, they carried themselves that same way. Just calm, never rattled. And those were the guys that seemed to be like dominant once they put the helmet on.
Yeah, and like you said, they're the ones that are scary to race up against because it's like, why aren't they talking crap? Why aren't they saying anything? You know, you have all these other drivers like, oh, I'm going to beat you tomorrow, or you better get your stuff ready for me. And Evan just goes out there, does the job, and man, 4-for-4.
Another first-time winner, this time on the sportsman side, and this one felt like it was imminent as well. We were kind of waiting for when it would fall his way, but Donald Reitzel finally taking the number one spot in 1600 Buggy. Again, showed a bunch of emotion on the podium. You could tell he was super excited to be able to stand there and know that he finally got one over on Connor Schultz and Mike Seifeld, all those other fast guys. That's a big moment for him. And you and I saw that coming. We didn't know when, but we knew he was close.
Oh, yeah. He's been putting in the effort and the time, and just the drivability that he has right now is very, very great to watch. I mean, as a driver myself, and you've been in the seat, it's cool to see people just progress, get better and better and better. And now that Reitzel's got that W in round four, he's going to be the one to try to tag on to, because you get to Cran and he's going to have a little bit more speed, more leg room, and I think that's going to, just driving that way is going to separate the men from the boys, and I believe he's doing what he needs to do.
Yeah, and taking a glimpse at the 1600 buggy points, Connor Schultz is still the points leader through four rounds. Got a 5-point lead over Taylor Roloff, who is, you know, equally fast and making a name for himself. Reitzel right there in third. Seafelt, the defending champ, stuck in fourth right now after running into some bad luck on Sunday at Antigo. And then Jake Shulman kind of been surprisingly fast, got his first podium in 1600 in round four.
Yeah, and it's cool to see that, though. I mean, Shulman very, very quick, and, you know, you just got to be there in the end. You got to be ready at any given moment. Anything can happen in this sport, and it's just cool to see all the differences and the different people that used to never been fast in the past, and now they're putting their stuff together and making it what it is today. And I just think all of our classes and sportsmen can get crazy at any given time.
Maybe the craziest of all is sportsmen side by side. And again, coming into this year, we knew that the top two in points had graduated out and moved on. Code St. Peter, Carson Hill, and Pro-Am side by side now. And that made it really wide open. We had no idea who was going to establish themselves as front runners. I still can't make much sense of it. Right now, the points leader is Isaac Otto, who had been fast in youth side-by-side last year and in the other youth classes previously. He's leading the points. His best finish so far this year is fifth. And when you look at the winners in sportsman side-by-side through four rounds, four different winners have won a race. Round one was Chad Amling, round two was Sam Phillips, and then at Antigo, round three, Stefano Caligiuro, and round four was Raymond Deininger, who won that race. How do you make sense of that? I mean, is it just going to be the same story all year where pick a name out of the hat, they're going to win this one?
Hey, it could be like last year in stock truck, right?
Right.
We had how many different winners and how many different rounds? It was crazy. I believe it was like 10 rounds of racing, 10 different winners. And we could see that all year. I really do believe it. And that's great for our sport. Nobody wants to sit up there and play the role of, okay, this guy wins nonstop. This is getting boring. It's like in these classes, anyone could win at any moment, and that's what makes it so entertaining, so much fun for the fans, the TV, everything about it is just going to be great, because you're not going to see that continuous winner of seven in a row, eight in a row, like we've seen back in the day with Kincaid and Taylor.
You bring up a good point there. It's got to be nice as a driver, too, that you line up any given day, and you're like, why not me today?
Right, right.
If the guy next to me on the starting line just got his first win in the class 2 weeks ago, why can't it be me today?
Yeah, and you're standing there, you're watching, you're just like in the same class as them. You're like, okay, well, man, I never thought that guy could win. Like, why not me, like you said? And then that's what builds that confidence. And when they can run the pace and run with each other and know that they're driving the same or close to that other driver is huge. I mean, you qualify for reasons. And sportsmen, we only go off of, you know, your practice laps, but at the same time, it means a lot to gain that tenth or that half a second is huge, especially in these smaller classes.
Yeah, and by the way, I mentioned Raymond Deininger winning in round four, being the fourth different driver to win a race this year. Put him down in the history books. We're in year seven of Champ Off Road, and he is now the first driver to have won a race all 7 years. So congratulations, Raymond. And it was cool to have him up in the booth with us, too, not long after he won that race.
Oh, yeah. What a great kid. His father's great behind the scenes. He's always putting in the hard work and the effort. And they always want to make sure that we notice what he's doing. And we do notice what he's doing because he's putting history in the books at such a young age. And he's going to be one to watch throughout the next couple years.
Well, dear listeners, at this point, I'll remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Amsoil. If you love power and performance and saving money, you should become an Amsoil Preferred Customer. You could save up to 25% on Amsoil products and receive free shipping, exclusive promotions, and more. Visit Amsoil.com and sign up today. Our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil, from Amsoil Pro Side-by-Side, Leland Tice. Leland, thanks so much for carving out some time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
I guess the headline news for your program this year is you're back with a brand new car. who built that car, and what was the process of being alongside a new build like for you?
Yeah, so originally it wasn't supposed to be an X3. We were trying to shoot for building a Mav-R. We talked to a few builders, and it just was just not going to happen this year. As you know, racing is very expensive.
Sure.
So we ended up putting a little post out there and find out that Cody Miller had a chassis for sale. That it's an S3 chassis, and they built the whole car in house and made a deal with us, and we couldn't pass up. And you know, we've been racing with Can-Am now for the last 3 years, and 3 years on a UTV chassis is quite a lot. So we decided to build a new get a new chassis, and then just transfer stuff from the old car onto the new one. But as racing goes, you know, you start out with something, and then you just start buying more new parts and whatnot. So, I mean, I do say that we swapped over some parts, but a lot of the car is brand new, and it's been really awesome. I actually, for Anago, it was my first time driving it. I literally drove it from the garage into the trailer, and then we finished up the UTV at Anago, and then ended up having a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good weekend for you to start out with that new car, Leland. And, you know, it's a stepping stone division, I believe, right? You can't just go in all open. You got to take your time and make sure the car is built right and make sure you have yourself prepared to be in the car. And that's pretty gnarly that you got in it and overcame all those hours of building and prepping and getting it ready and still finishing it up at Anago. But, like, now moving out of Anago into Crandon, do you feel really confident going forward, or was there a lot of things that you need to fix?
No, I really do feel comfortable. I mean, practicing qualifying in the first race on Saturday at Anago was just, you know, it was just new car gremlins. You know, it's stuff that we could have figured out testing, but we just didn't have that time. So I knew going into Anago there was going to be some new car bugs, and that's exactly what happened. You know, we figured that stuff out. My dad and my buddy Hunter, they worked tirelessly on this UTV, and you know, I can't thank them guys enough for all the work that they do. And you know, Hunter ended up finding out quite a few things. And you know, going into Saturday, you know, Nate and Kyler with Bill Stein were right on it, helping me out and getting the shocks dialed in. And it took me a little bit, but I'd say around halfway, it really started feeling super comfortable, super planted to the ground. And, you know, with the Wayland Speed Tune that we have and the KWI clutching, I mean, it feels really good. So I'm excited going into Crandon. I've had a fourth place finish there in the Sunday World Cup weekend.
Yeah.
So, I'm pretty comfortable at Crandon. I'm confident to say that, I'm definitely going to be shooting for top five or better at Crandon. So,
I mean, the way that the race played out in round four Sunday at Anago also has to give you that confidence too. Like you were saying, that you had some new car blues in round three, the first time you raced it, but to, I guess, survive and emerge from such a wild race. And I'm sure you've gone back and watched it. It was a crazy race all around you, and you survived that to finish fourth, which is your best points finish in a champ race. Did you even know in the moment that race around you and the couple guys in front of you were having all kinds of issues, or were you just focused on taking what the race gave you?
No, I was trying to pay attention. I did see a few guys out that were in front of me, but you know, I had Eric Hill actually came up to me, and we were talking for a little bit, and I asked him if he wanted to be my spotter. And nice. You know, my dad spots for me, and he does a good job, but I think what I really needed was somebody that actually is out on the track and the track right conditions to spot. And I got to give my hat off to Eric Hill. He did a phenomenal job, you know, not making me lose my head and just making sure I was comfortable and, you know, getting me through the race. And I didn't even know that I was in fourth place actually until the very end of the race. He's just like, fourth place, dude, good job. And, you know, I got a little emotional, right? Because, you know, it's just, you put in all them hours and to get that close to a podium, you know, on the first race weekend in the car with maybe an hour of drive time is just right, crazy. So
right. And you talked about, you know, being in the top five going into Crandon, and that was your goal. Look at that. You already knocked it off your first weekend out with the car. So I mean, you still need to get more dialed in for yourself. I believe, like, in your eyes, I know as a racer, right, you'd never feel like you're doing everything that you can. You can put in all the hard work and all the hours, but learning a new car, you're like, okay, is it supposed to do that or is it not supposed to do that? You're trying to learn it as you go.
I was going to say, you did all that while learning how to drive a new car.
You're right, yeah. Right. That's amazing. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, I say top five, but I mean, obviously, you know, anybody that's super competitive, you know, especially in my class, I mean, you're shooting for a podium. So, I mean, in all reality, I am shooting for a podium, but, you know, top five is definitely what we're looking for, you know, every race weekend. So
what were your expectations before Antigo? Like, what were you hoping to accomplish at Antigo, debuting a brand new car with no seat time?
I think, to be honest with you, I didn't really have like a lot of expectations. I think I knew going in that it was going to be a big learning curve, and just getting comfortable and everything. I just, you know, I hate to say it, but it was almost kind of a mindset of, we need to go out there, we need to make sure the car is good, almost kind of like a practice session, but yet still push to try to do the best I can. And I didn't really set like, hey, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take a top five or anything like that. The goal was to make sure the car was good, to make sure, you know, all of our T's were crossed and our I's were dotted and we were good to go. And it took all of that, you know, leading up to Sunday to be able to finish where we did.
But that had to be a hell of a ride home though, for you and your father and the team, right? I mean,
go forward,
right? It's always like Shane was just saying, that confidence is everything. And that probably opened your eyes even quicker than you thought this year.
Yeah, no, it definitely built up confidence in myself and with me being able to trust the car more. So, and I am really comfortable at Crandon. It's one of my favorite tracks. So I'm excited to go there with a new car that I feel comfortable in and really see what it's got.
You've already brought your dad up a couple times now. You know, over the past few years, you've been racing champ. Every time I'm walking the pits and I walk past your pit, your dad's working right alongside you. You know, like, can you even put into words how important he is to everything that you do on the racetrack?
Oh, yeah, man. I can't. It is crazy how much he puts into, you know, my race program and just making sure we got the best stuff we can. Because, you know, not being like a super huge big back, you know, money back team, you know, right. It's we got three incomes, you know, plus sponsorships going into the race program, trying to do the best we can. And, he does so much. Like, I used to work nights. I recently took a new position to where I'm working days, but, you know, every night he'd be here at the house working on the car. I'd get it cleaned up and washed up, and then he'd be doing all the maintenance and everything like that. And, you know, without his help, it would really be a struggle, because even just having a UTV, I mean, you got to make sure that thing's going to make a, you know, an 11-minute sprint or 13-minute sprint. You know, it's not like desert where you're, you know, you're going for the, you know, the longevity. It's a sprint with short course racing, and you just got to really make sure that your maintenance program is dialed in so that you are there at the end.
Seeing him always working alongside you, it seems he's not just supporting you, but like he's totally bought in, where your success is kind of his success. Like, he feels about it that way. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, it's definitely a huge father-son, you know. When we do good, it's just such a huge, like, relief. We're high-fiving, you know, hugging, you know, even my mom, like, she's super big behind the scenes. She's the one doing all the grocery shopping and the cooking and everything like that. And then you got my buddy Hunter that helps me out. We actually work together, but he's been helping me out for the last couple of years. And him on the team too has been a huge help, but definitely a huge family bonding time. And yeah, whether you got a good race weekend or a bad race weekend, you know, it's always good, you know, to come home, just talk about it as a family, and just, you know, just re-rack and regroup for the next race weekend. And when you have a good race weekend, it's, you know, you're coming back home on a high, right? I mean, it's one of the best feelings, especially to do that with your family.
Yeah, and like you said perfectly, right? Even on the bad weekends, you know your dad's got your back and he's your right-hand man, right? And win or lose or have a horrible or great weekend, he's right there. And I've seen it for many years, and that's very special.
Yeah, no, you know, even when we do have a bad weekend, you know, we get pretty bummed out. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, you're spending all this time and money into something, and we do a good job at just keeping each other's heads up and, you know, just fighting through.
Yeah, you never stop trying, though. That's what I noticed the last 3-4 years of your program. It's like, you know, you have a bad day, you wad up the car, and then sure, here you come back and don't give up, right? And that's the main thing. A lot of people come in and have 1-2 bad weekends and then just fold the towel and put it in. And at the end of the day, it all pays off in the end. Granted, it's expensive, but the gratification out of it's unreal.
Oh yeah. And even above all that, even like the, you know, the off-road community is right. So cool. Like, you know, last year, or actually it was the year before that, it was actually at Dirt City when I had that bad rollover where Zach Schimmick actually reached out to me and, you know, offered his transmission out of his pre-runner X3 from KOH. So, I mean, it's just, you know, the off-road community is so awesome and just, you know, I love this sport.
I know I've heard bits and pieces about it, but your dad was a racer in his day too, right?
Oh yeah. That's actually how the number 94 came about, is, you know, because I was born in 1994 and my dad started racing IMCA Modifieds like not too long after I was born.
Nice.
And so he raced dirt track modifieds for a long time, and then he got into late models. And I got my racing started in go-karts. And when I started racing, then my dad decided to, you know, hang up the steering wheel and focus on my race program. And started racing go-karts. You know, I raced with Cole Dabler, Ty Majeski, you know, had a lot of awesome special, like big specials and stuff like that. And growing up through that and through go-kart racing and then finding out about off-road racing, you know, I think my first off-road race I went to, I was actually working for another company out in Minnesota, and I think it was the first year ERX, I think, started in 2017, right?
It might have been a couple of years earlier than that, 2015, I think.
Yeah, so 2017 I was there, and you know, it got to the truck classes, you know, and then it got to the Pro Fours, and that was actually the time when I think CJ had that like Maxxis wrap on his Pro Four.
Okay.
And, you know, I was just hooked. I was like, man, this, I like circle track racing, but gosh dang, off-road racing is just another level, man. I mean, it's like, I always tell people it's like a mix between supercross and, circle track racing, because you're going fast, but you're also hitting jumps wide open. And it's just a huge adrenaline dump.
The fact that you're a racetrack kid, even though it was at, you know, dirt tracks and not at an off-road track, but you have that in common with both Brent and me. I know that some of Brent's earliest memories are his dad taking him and Brock to the races. And my dad's been involved in off-road racing since 1970, when it all started in Crandon. With Father's Day coming up, and we'll be at Crandon on Father's Day, do you have a favorite memory, maybe from when you were a younger kid, of spending time with your dad at the racetrack?
I think my very first feature win in go-karts was probably like one of my best memories. And it's not only because my dad is such a big deal and a part of my race program, but my grandpa actually, my parents were on vacation and my grandpa was actually with me, my dad's dad. And we went to Hygo and I won my first feature win with my grandpa there. And, you know, I had to call my dad, and it was just a huge celebration, because, you know, even though they were on vacation, they were still supporting me, and it was just like his dad was there and my grandpa, and, you know, so that was a huge thing for me, and it's something that's going to stick with me forever.
Yeah, those memories can never be replaced, right? You just find yourself in those moments where, yeah, it would have been nice to have your mom and dad there, but at the same time, you know, grandpa fulfilled the spot, and you guys still got to collaborate and be excited in your winning ways, even though they were far away from home. But that just drug you into just being obsessed about go-karting, right? And once you get that first feel of that big win, it's like, all right, where's the next one?
Yeah. No, and it actually, you know, it is true. Like once you find that pace, it definitely helps, you know, once you start winning, and they come, you know, no, good finishes come a little bit easier. And, you know, that's where it started, was my first feature win. And then we have numerous heat wins and feature wins and go-karts. And I moved to, right before I got out of go-karts, I actually went into Winged Outlaw cart. I don't know if you, those are like the carts with like the 450 or 250 dirt bike engines in them. I raced those for like a year or two. My buddy Kyle Rodant, that raced Circle Track, he had a spare one. So I kind of rented that from him and did that for a little bit before I got out of it to, you know, go start real adulting and get a job and everything. And then
the boring stuff.
Damn it.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's what actually put me in position to be at ERX to see off-road racing. Because before that, I didn't really know a lot about it and I didn't really like follow it. But then once I found out about the sport, I just kept digging deeper and, you know, just digging more into the history of it. And, it's just cool. What an awesome sport.
It's wild to me that, because you're in the Pulaski area now, right? But is that where you grew up?
I went to school and all that in Pulaski, and but we actually lived about 10 minutes north of Pulaski, and I actually grew up in a small town called Croco, Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah, it's wild that going to other forms of racing, you know, in the area, being from near Green Bay, that like you never had heard of the racing that had been going on for decades.
Yeah. And you know, you see it periodically on TV, you know back in the days when, you know, it was like what was like the one series I remember, like, I think it was like, did they have a Traxxas series or so I think the Traxxas one was where I kind of seen it on TV and stuff like that. But I guess I didn't think it was actually that big when I was that, you know, back in my younger days, that it was that big of a thing. And you know, even today, still, like, I feel like short course racing is such a hidden gem. Like, once more and more people start, you know, seeing it, and I think it's going to just explode.
Right. Well, what you said about, like, the first time you saw it in person and then saw Pro 4, you're like, holy cow, this is where it's at. Funny enough, we had Jimmy Henderson on this podcast 4 or 5 years ago now. He said the exact same thing. Like, he came to check it out as a side-by-side racer, and he said it was at Crandon, the first time the Pro 4s came off the land rush in a turn one. He's like, all right, that's, I'm going to scratch and claw to do that because I have to.
Yeah, yeah.
And we hear, you know, Brent will back me up. We hear this from fans all the time too. I didn't know what it was. My cousin told me to come with him and check it out. Now I've been coming for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy though, how many people do not look for it or heard of it. And we always say it's the best kept secret, but at the same time, it's like,
yeah, we don't want it to be secret.
Right.
Yeah. We don't want everybody to secrets. Know.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. I believe we get them there. We get them to feel it and watch it and smell the fuel and all the bad stuff at the same time. I mean, that's where it's at. I mean, it's hard. I went to Circle Track last weekend just to go watch racing, and I kept looking at my brother like, damn, you know, it's fun to watch, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, man, I could watch some off-roads.
Well, you know, and that's the thing too, is like growing up around Circle Track. I mean, because when I was growing up, I always wanted to go in the pits, but I just wasn't old enough. And, you know, you had to wait till the end of the night to walk through the pits with your parents and to go get, you know, those hot shot cards and get them signed and everything like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the best things about off-road racing is just all the fans can walk around all day long and chat with their favorite driver or hang out with them and get stuff signed all day long, all throughout the weekend, you know. So to me, that is just, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's really no other form of sport that you could go to, like IndyCar, NASCAR. Yeah, granted, you can get behind the wall if you have passes, but you're restricted to go in these so many spots when you're at those events. And Champ Off-Road, you don't have to worry. You get your wristband, and like you said, you can go mingle, make new friends. And it's amazing to watch over the years that Shane and I have been around it, how many people we've watched back in the day just start coming, and now they're some of the biggest names in the sport, let alone they have more friends at the track than they do back in their hometown.
Right. I always, and it's so funny, like, you know, you can go up to anybody you want and stuff. And like, you can go up to CJ and Johnny Greaves. And, you know, I kind of joke around because whenever I go to CJ's house, he's got his rings up there. I'm like, holy man, you got more rings than Tom Brady. So it's cool that you can just, you know, go and hang out with them and go chat with them. And every racer, for that matter, it's, you know, we're all open, even myself, and we always love talking and meeting new people. So, yeah, that's, like I said, that's one of the best things about off-road racing.
Leland, one of the things Brent brought up a few minutes ago, I do want to ask you about, he said something to the effect of that no matter how bad it gets for you and your team, and there have been some bad times, like, you know, last year, a couple bad crashes, one at ERX, one at Bark River. But it seems like you have just like endless determination to keep going. Where do you think that comes from?
I think it's really just, you know, it's just a thing I have. Like, I just, you know, whenever I do something, I try to do it the best I can and try to get to, I set a goal, and I really don't want to stop until I hit that goal, no matter how big it is. You know, even through like go-karts, you know, going from, you know, I mean, winning quite a bit to off-road racing, where it's like, holy crap, these guys are really good. You know, like, it's not that easy. My goal, and I think pretty much everybody else's goal that takes this sport super serious, is, you know, you want to be in that Pro 2 or that Pro 4 truck class. And, you know, one day I hope to be there, and, you know, I'm only getting older, but, you know, you never know. So, the drive is there. You know, I love the sport. I even love the class. I mean, the pro side-by-side class is just, it's next level. I mean, you're racing with the best UTV drivers in the nation. You know, it really is anybody's race. Like, as long as you put in the homework and stuff like that, you never know what could happen.
No, I agree with you, though. There's so many great drivers and racers in that class. It's like you have a lot to work towards and to look forward to, right? Every weekend you can pick apart little things to make yourself better, the car better. And once you get that all dialed in, then it becomes a lot more fun at the end.
Yeah, it's definitely... you know, a goal of mine to be able to get into a truck class, but, you know, we all know how how expensive that is.
You know, talking about, like you said, that we really do have some of the best side-by-side racers in the country, and that's proven when a bunch of our drivers, you know, especially the guys from the southern states, go to other places like Durham Town or, you know, different tracks around the country and basically mop up, and then they come to Champ Off-Road, and it's much, much harder to win here. Do you have moments like that where you kind of pinch yourself and you're like, holy cow, like I'm doing well and I'm running against guys like Jeb Boodle and, you know, at Antigo, Robert Loire, and Collins, obviously super fast. Do you ever like take a step back and go like, okay, I can hang with these guys?
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's just, now that you mention that, it kind of is like a arm pinching moment. Right. And because the guys that are in that class, you know, a lot of them race for a living, right? And
right.
Be up there and you know, finishing where I am with guys of that talent level, and it's an incredible feeling. And you know, I'm really shooting for that podium. I haven't gotten a podium yet in the 7 years I've been racing in the pro side by side class, but it is hard, man. And the guys that are up on that podium every week, like it's incredible.
Hey, one away, man. You got fourth in Antigo, so you just got to keep fighting the good fight, and right, you're going in the right direction. And sometimes you got to wish for people to have bad days so you can have a great day, right? And that's why you're out there and you're putting forth the 120% effort. Just like any other racer, it's not an easy task to accomplish, but you're going in the right direction, obviously, and that's got to be a better feeling than anything,
right? And you know what the saying is, that, you know, to win you must first finish. So I just keep going back to maintenance, and, you know, as long as you're doing everything you can in the shop come race day, you should be, you know, making it to the end and, you know, outperforming the people. I don't want to say people that don't do good maintenance, but I mean, as long as you're, like I said, crossing your T's and dotting your I's, I mean, you should make it till the end and hopefully have a good finish.
Well, we always talk about, Shane and I talked about it quite a few different times, but you're always saying, you know, even if it's your girlfriend or your wife or your spouse or whatever, friends come over, they're always like, man, are you ever done with that car? Like, why are you still working on it? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? I'm like, I guess you guys just don't understand, right? I remember how many times my brother would be like, you checked that? And he'd be like, yeah, I did. I'd go back and check it again just because, right? You just do it. And it's just, yeah, I think it's embedded in you throughout your life. If you want to be a good racer and a great racer, you got to be hands-on and make sure you have checklists and dial your stuff in, right? You can have the baddest ass car in the world, but if it doesn't keep the tires on or the engine underneath it, what good is it?
Yeah. And I always tell people, you know, one of my other things I really like doing is working out, and I follow a lot of bodybuilders, and you know, they always say bodybuilding isn't a hobby, it's a lifestyle. And I can strongly say I feel like that's definitely the same way with, you know, off-road racing, and because it's truly greater than a hobby. It really is a lifestyle, because, you know, I don't hunt, I don't fish anymore. Like, this is what I do. I love the sport. I put all my attention and focus into this, and, you know, and it's a whole family event.
I mentioned the season of more downs than ups, I guess, last year, and the hardship that you went through, but at the banquet, you were recognized. You won an award, the Resilience Award from Champ Off-Road for the 2025 season, and your acceptance speech for it showed a lot of emotions. What was it like to be recognized for that relentless spirit that you have? And what did that award mean to you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to thank everybody that voted for me for that award. Yeah, it was a very emotional time. I wasn't expecting it. And, you know, just to, like, not expecting it and getting that, and just having that flood of emotions come over you, you know, just thinking about everybody that helped you throughout the whole entire year, even if it's like a racer. Like, I know Corey Winter, even when I had that bad rollover at ERX, Corey Winter even came over and just was asking what's up or if I needed any help. And it's just, you know, it's just every single person that, you know, came up to talk to me or help me out, is a part of that award, because, you know, everybody truly had a hand in it, whether they're asking for help or my dad and my buddy working on it, or anybody on the crew helping and just making sure that I can get back out on the track. So the Resilience Award isn't truly just for me. It's for everybody that helped through the whole entire season, sponsorship wise, and just lending a hand. I know the Christensens, Tim Christensen and his family, we used to pit together until they got all the buggy guys together. So now sure, They're with all the buggies. But, you know, their family was a huge help as well. And, you know, even some guys on their crew even lended a hand welding at ERX. So, or no, it was actually at Bark River, that one. Yeah, it's truly for everybody. I'm truly grateful for the award, and I can't thank everybody enough.
It's got to be satisfying. You know, I remember talking to you about how that's not an award that anybody sets out to win, but it does have to be satisfying that, like, people recognize that you continued to put in the work against all the hardship, right?
Yeah, because, you know, it is tough, you know, when you don't really have a big budget and you're trying to make it to every race. I really wanted to try to get that top five in points last year, but just with the, you know, the rollovers that we had and stuff breaking, it just, it was hard. And sometimes you sit down and you just start talking and you're just like, you know, do we need to keep going? Do we need to take a break and stuff like that? And, you know, I just, at the end of the day, taking a break is not going to help me get to my goal of what I want to do. So, you know, we pushed through and, you know, and we made it happen with a lot of help. We made it happen. And, you know, so super thankful.
It's interesting too, that you, brought up that you follow some bodybuilders. Clearly I'm not a bodybuilder, but I do know that
scrawny, they're nice,
you know, something like that, you know, any athletic pursuit teaches you discipline, and you understand that, like, the results are going to be far down the road. And I think that really does parallel racing, any kind of motorsports, the same way. And, you know, you're a good example of that, where it's been in such a grind. And like you said, where you're so close to the podium, I just found it interesting that you mentioned bodybuilding, and that, like I said, the discipline of each one to stick to it, even though the results are not immediate, that stood out to me.
Yeah, it's definitely a long-term thing. You know, like I said, you know, I've been racing for 7 years and I haven't gotten on that podium yet, but it seems like now we're getting closer and closer every time. And, you know, hopefully that comes up pretty quick. And it's definitely going to be just an overwhelming experience. And it's going to be huge.
Well, looking at what's next, it's the Forest County Potawatomi Brush Run Speed Festival, Crandon, going back to the big house. Like you said, you've done well there in the past. You feel confident after the weekend that you had at Antigo. What is it about Crandon that specifically that makes you feel like you do well there?
I think it's just it's everything, right? It's the history behind the track, and it's just you know, the layout and everything. It's just, I feel just super comfortable there. I love going fast. Crandon is a high speed track. They got big jumps. You're flying over 100+ feet. I mean, it's an incredible racetrack. I mean, it's super wide. There's plenty of room to pass. They do a great job at that facility. And, you know, that's by far one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah, the big house, always the best place to be, right? And how many people say, you know, if you can win one, you'd want to win one at the big house. So I hope you can conquer Crandon and keep moving forward, though, buddy, because, hey, you got a hell of a finish coming off of Antigo, and I'm sure you got that car ready to rock and roll.
Yep, it's just sitting tucked. Smurf is just sitting tucked away in the shop right now. Just staring out the window at the rain, but... yeah, come spring Crandon, hopefully we got some good weather. I see that it's...
that's racing weather. Yeah, what was it? Last year, Sunday, the day of the viral moment, the first big viral moment in our sports history, it was what, like 105 degree heat index?
Oh, yeah, it was toasty, very toasty.
Yeah, we're not in shape like you, so we really feel it.
Yeah, and we don't have to wear a driving suit either, Brent.
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna have to talk to Crandon and make sure they got that AC unit working up there in the tower.
Well, I'm sure we'll shut it off a couple times. No, I'm just kidding.
And then the rest of the year, Leland, are you in for full pull the rest of the way?
Yeah, man. Going to California last year, I didn't really know what to expect, but man, after going there, it was awesome. It was a great time. The track layout was... it was really close to one of my favorite layouts because they had the rhythm section there, and they were pretty tall. I don't know if you want to call them like moguls, but it's like no matter, you could only hit them so fast because you couldn't quite double them. You're just, you know, jumping through there basically like a bunny rabbit, you know? And then once everybody gets to the end, then you're just a full out sprint back around the track again. So yeah, it made it really interesting, to be honest with you. And the crowd turnout was awesome. I think they said they had, 18,000 people there or something crazy like that.
Yeah, it was packed. It was jam-packed. It was standing quite alone. A show. Oh, yeah, exactly. And
I've only heard secondhand because I wasn't able to go last year. So I'm, super excited to get there.
Oh, yeah, it's a good time.
The people are so nice, too. The owners of the track are just great people to work with. I got a chance to see them over the winter time, and they're just excited and ecstatic about the sport, right? They want it to build, and they're like, if you guys are out here and you need test time, just show up to the track. We'll figure something out. And they're just willing to work out with people. And
oh, that's the best. That's the best. Yeah. And then on top of all that, we got the 50th at Bark River this year. That is going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's going to be a barn burner.
Are you going to enter the long jump contest?
Yeah, I was just saying, I heard they were talking about long jump contest, and I was actually talking to Nate from Bilstein. I'm like, hey, you know, sponsored by Shock Company, looks like we got to do the long jump competition. He started laughing, but, you know, I was actually being serious. I'm like, I might go take a swing at it just to see how far we can go. But we also got to keep in the back of our mind that we do got a race yet. So
right.
Get too carried away.
Yeah, we should have this on Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening after it's done so they can wad it up if they want to.
I definitely remember from, you know, back in the day when they had the jump contest every year, that there was, it seemed like every year there was one or two guys that all of a sudden had a whole bunch of work to do Friday night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I heard too, is there was guys showing up with, like, you know, special shock package and just different aero packages just for the long jump competition. But that's crazy. But I do think the 50th at Bark River is going to be really cool as well.
Yeah, I know that we're looking forward to it as well. But hey, man, we do really appreciate you spending time with us. Just keep digging, man. It was great to see you up in the top five at Antigo. And, you know, like I said, you're being recognized for your resilience. Just keep chopping wood.
Yeah, no, I can't thank you guys enough for having me on the podcast. And it's been a good time talking to you guys. And yeah, can't wait to see you guys at Crandon.
Heck yeah, buddy. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Shane, it was great to catch up with Leland Tyes and everyone that has been around this sport for a long time. It means a lot to them to be back in the booth. But now our eyes are focused on Crandon, and man, it's going to be great.
Yeah, for sure. The Forest County Pottawatomie Brush Run Speed Festival, whole bunch of interesting stuff going on, not just Champ Off-Road and our two rounds of racing and the Forest County Pottawatomie Community Cup. And hey, by the way, it's almost the 1 year anniversary of maybe the greatest moment in short course history. We can talk about that on the next one, as well as everything to look out for at Crandon rounds 5 and 6. But that will do it for this one. This has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. He has been Brent. I have been Shane, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.